welcome to Dismantling Injustice, the podcast of Envision Freedom Fund. I'm Julie Menti, Envision's Communications Manager, filling in as host for Executive Director Carl Hammett-Lipscomb. Right now in New York City, there are 6,157 people being jailed in the Rikers Island Jail Complex. Let me hit you with some more numbers about Rikers. 87% of the people there are being held pre-trial. That means their cases are still pending. They've not been convicted or exonerated or taken a plea. More than 90% are people of color. At least 55% have some symptoms of mental illness. And finally, 28 people have died while in custody of New York's Department of Corrections in the last 2 years alone. These numbers should be more than enough evidence to prove that our city jail system is unjust, racist, and even deadly. Yet judges and DAs continue to send members of our communities to Rikers, and the mayor and the Department of Corrections remain unable and unwilling to decarcerate and close these inhumane facilities. Today we're joined by Darren Mack, the co-director and co-founder of Freedom Agenda, and Larae Hodge, one of Freedom Agenda's member leaders. Darren is a survivor of both Rikers and the New York State prison system. For more than 10 years, he's been advocating for the closure of Rikers and defending the rights of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated people. Larae, whose son is currently jailed in Rikers, has been advocating for closing this facility and demanding accountability from the city. We are privileged to share with you this conversation about the humanitarian crisis at Rikers and our shared determination that New York City needs to put money and resources into community hands instead of into jails. I'll be right back with Darren Mack and Larae Hodge.
Over the last 8 years, Envision Freedom Fund has paid more than $10 million to free individuals in pretrial and immigration detention. A big thank you to all of our donors who help us to pay this much too high price for freedom. At Envision Freedom, we know that paying bail or bond will never be enough on its own to end the humanitarian crisis that is incarceration and surveillance of Black, Brown, and immigrant communities. That's why we also fight to dismantle the systems that harm these communities in the first place. If this sounds like the transformative change that you believe in, you can join us. Visit our website, envisionfreedom.org, or click the link right on our Spotify profile to donate to our work. Because freedom for all people will take all of us. And now, back to the show.
Thank you so much, Darren and Larae, for joining us. Darren, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what brought you into the fight to decarcerate New York City and be a defender of human rights of incarcerated people.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having us. My name is Darren Mack. I go by he, him pronouns, and I'm a co-director at Freedom Agenda, which is a member-led organization dedicated to organizing people and communities directly impacted by incarceration to achieve decarceration and system transformation. You know, I'm a Brooklynite and born and raised in Brooklyn in the old Bushwick. What got me into this fight, at the age of 17, I was incarcerated at Rikers Island when the population was over 20,000 people detained there. And coming home, you know, after, you know, almost, you know, 19 years within the New York State prison system, to see, you know, the conditions, the inhumane treatment and violence was still plaguing Rikers Island, you know, almost two decades later, with, you know, less than half of the population. I knew that, you know, something had to be done, you know, from you know, people who've been impacted by you know, Rikers Island. And I got into this fight about almost 8 years ago, and now leading the campaign to close Rikers along with over 170 organizational partners throughout New York City to bring the closure of Rikers Island to its finish line.
And Larae, I know you're a member of Freedom Agenda. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this work?
For some strange reason, I had seen like an email or something, so I registered. I don't know where I got it from, but I registered, and sometime in the future, Darren Mack had called me and we talked, and he got to know what my concerns were, and I became a member, and I've been connected ever since.
That's great. And why was it important for you to want to be involved?
Well, because I have a son, and he's been a couple of times on Rikers, and it's just been a little disturbance why I wanted to get involved.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit first. Darren, you used the term decarcerate a few times, and you and I had spoken earlier about how some people might not understand that word, and you know, just want to make sure that people know what that means. Can you talk a little bit about what decarceration is and, you know, sort of where we are now in terms of how Rikers is or is not being decarcerated?
Yeah, so like from my perspective, I think of decarceration on two or three fronts, and that's preventative. Deterring people, off-ramping people from incarceration in the first place. Like right now, we have a population of approximately 6,000 people detained on Rikers Island. Half of that population, a little over half of that population, has a mental health diagnosis, and 90% of them have a serious mental health diagnosis. So we believe that, you know, people who have mental health challenges should be getting treatment, not jail. And, you know, there should be, you know, mental health resources, you know, in the communities, you know, where people could to access to address their issues. And that's one preventive way to decarcerate, off-ramping people, you know, and prevent the people from being entangled in the criminal legal system in the first place. And then for those who are detained on Rikers Island, you know, decarcerating by releasing people to, you know, alternatives to incarceration and alternatives to detention, and, you know, to those community-based programs and services where they could get the services that they need. You know, 90% of the people on Rikers Island are there pre-trial, meaning they haven't had their day in court yet. And one of the main reasons why they remain, you know, detained is because they have bails that they can't afford. And I think that's a wealth-based issue, and which is problematic in its roots. And then for those who are returning, you know, back to, you have people there serving city sentences, like of 1 year or less. You know, why can't they do that, you know, at home at an alternative incarceration detention program, and they could go to school and go to work and, you know, and take some type of program, you know, to address, you know, whatever their issues is. So decarceration happened on, you know, all those fronts, and, you know, and more. And that's just a little slip of what I understand, you know, decarceration to mean.
Yeah. And I want to add too, we've done a lot of organizing and advocacy with Freedom Agenda about judicial accountability and holding judges and DAs accountable for the decisions they make that funnel more people into Rikers when it doesn't have to be that way. So let's talk about Rikers itself. You know, we know it's been in the news constantly about unsafe conditions and inhumane conditions. 19 people have died in New York City jails in 2022, and at least 9 people have died in DOC custody this year. You know, so what are the day-to-day realities that the general public might not know about what people are experiencing at Rikers, or just might not know about Rikers at all?
For me, I, you know, I go visit my son, but not all the time, because for one, is the setup in, but the whole search is too long. By the time you go visit your loved one, it's not set up in a safe environment. It just doesn't feel like it was safe. So the last time I visited my son, I didn't stay the whole visit. I felt it a little uncomfortable. since my son been in there, he's got stabbed twice, once in the face and one in the arm. And he think he's not stable enough to make right decisions and choices. He needs help. I don't think he needs to be in there. I think he needs to be in a rehab program, because what got him in there is substance, due to the fact of his, you know, his history of his life. It's you know, it's a lot of them, like Darren has said, there's a lot of them that's in there that suffers with mental health, and the reason for mental health is they self-medicating themselves with marijuana, whatever type of drugs that they use. And their behavior comes after that. So instead of them evaluating the problem, they just lock everybody up. So it's a mixture of different things that's in there, instead of trying to find out the history of what is really going on.
Do you feel like your son has been receiving any medical care, mental health care, or anything since he's been inside?
Well, he haven't mentioned anything about getting any of those type of cares. He's traumatized, to be honest. He's been through a lot. He haven't really had a childhood life. He's been from psych medication to hospitalization to residential and then incarcerated. So he doesn't really have he doesn't have a life to experience what it's like to live.
How old is your son?
He just turned 23 in October.
Wow. And what kind of impact has this had on you? Because it's certainly, you know, the trauma of what he's experiencing extends outward.
This is trauma for not just me, but for the whole family on both sides, because the system failed a lot of us. When we really needed help, we really needed services to help us, to keep us all connected, no one was there. We had, you know, a lot of us, like myself, have to sit up there and try to figure out how to cope with this stuff. So it's trauma. It's a lot of traumatizing in my family.
Yeah. What kind of support would you like to see for your son and for other people who are in the same position as him?
I feel like they should have like some type of advocacy, social services. Most of the majority of them that's incarcerated, they have nowhere to go. And then when they want their own, when they get a certain age, they can't get housing. He was in a shelter. He had a voucher, but he wasn't successful to get a place to stay. So it makes people more violent. It makes people more depressed. Then people start doing drugs and stuff. And then you got a criminal situation on the streets. And the whole system is a backwards thing. You know, we don't have nobody that sits to really listen to what families are going through.
Yeah.
And if they hear story, then they know how to help people.
Yeah, and I think you've raised some really great points, Lorraine, of how it's a multi-system failure, you know, in terms of not just the criminal system, but of our healthcare system, of our social service system, of our shelter system, and that, you know, to really see long-term change and to see people be able to be free and to thrive, that we need to address all of those systems. Darren, can you talk a little bit more about, you know, some of the things the general public might not know or understand about Rikers that you think are really important for people to know and understand?
Sure. So, you know, Rikers Island is a jail complex with 10 jails on 400 acres of land. Listeners may have heard that, you know, New York's infamous penal colony. It's a penal colony like Alcatraz was a penal colony that closed decades ago, and McNeil Island in Washington, which closed in the early 2000s, even New York City to have Rikers Island, the last penal colony in the United States. So it's scheduled to close thanks to survivors of Rikers, such as myself, family members of people who experienced Rikers, like Lorraine, and allies in the campaign to close Rikers. And, you know, listeners probably also heard that it's currently in a state of urgent humanitarian crisis, with more people dying there every month, thousands of missed medical appointments, and jail guards who aren't accountable to no one. Both of these are true, you know, and it's crucial to address, you know, the immediate conditions there while continuing the work of closing Rikers for good. And how we're going to get it done is thanks to the work of directly impacted people, you know, by the brutality of Rikers and our allies. You know, New York has a legal obligation to close the jails on Rikers by August 31st, 2027, and plans in place, you know, both to reduce incarceration capacity and repurpose Rikers for green infrastructure in the future. But, you know, we can't leave, you know, thousands of people in the current conditions of Rikers for another 4 years. So, you know, as was mentioned earlier, 28 people have lost their lives since this administration came to office in January 2021. And we need to reduce incarceration now, or, you know, we are on pace to lose more lives. So anyone hearing our voice or Lorraine's voice, you have family members and loved ones and friends on Rikers Island, we need to get involved, you know, with Freedom Agenda and the campaign to close Rikers so we can address, you know, the roots of incarceration that to close the pipelines that feed Rikers Island.
Yeah. And we'll make sure to drop in the show notes the link to Freedom Agenda website and the Close Rikers website. In speaking about sort of decarceration and how we can prevent people from even going into the Rikers complex at all, Darren, how do you think, you know, public perception of safety and who deserves safety is contributing to, you know, people being funneled into Rikers and also the conditions there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So people have to understand that, you know, over the 90% of the population, you know, on Rikers Island are there pre-trial. And if we believe in the presumption of innocence, we have to give that to everyone, you know, including those on the Rikers Island who, you know, haven't had their day in court. And unfortunately, this mayor, if you was to listen to him, you know, he made statements very concerning and fear-mongering statements as if the people detained on Rikers Island are guilty just because they've been arrested. And that's not the – and just threw away, you know, the presumption of innocence. You know, I'm sure many listeners probably heard of the case of Khalif Browder, you know, who was on Rikers Island for 3 years without, you know, and the trauma that he went through. After he was released after 3 years, they dismissed the case, and because of the trauma, he took his own life. Laylene Polanco, you know, who didn't have her day in court, you know, died on Rikers Island. So many names, you know, that we can, you know, people probably heard of. And I think that, you know, we need to like do better. If we believe in human rights, if we believe in civilization, we need to treat people, you know, accordingly, you know, with the presumption of innocence. And like Lorraine mentioned, you know, half of the people on Rikers have mental health issues. You know, Jordan Neely was released from Rikers Island 15 months. And she said, you know, Lorraine said the system's failed, you know, Neely. There's a lot of Jordan Neelys that the system has failed, you know, and like Lorraine's son as well is another one. And we could do better by investing in communities, decarceration, and, you know, doing what we know that brings actually enhanced community safety, like, you know, housing, like mental health services and such.
Yeah. And addiction services and any number of community-based programming that could really prevent people from having to experience the trauma of incarceration. You know, in addition to sort of the very present dangers of Rikers, there's also something looming underneath the surface that is both a metaphor and very real, of there being toxic waste on the island. And, you know, can you explain sort of the issue with the foundation of Rikers and, you know, sort of what you have in mind with Freedom Agenda and others to envision a renewable Rikers?
Yes. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, Rikers Island, you know, sits on over 400 acres of land, but the vast majority of it, the vast majority, like 90% of it, is actually landfilled. And, you know, this landfill is toxic. So toxic, they had methane gas. It emits methane gas, and they had methane gas alarm. They used to go off every day, and they basically just shut it off. And, you know, there's even been civil suits, you know, against the city from Department of Corrections staff making a claim that they actually got cancer from drinking the water. Like, I remember being a volunteer, you know, for some adolescents on Rikers Island for a pilot project program. And for the first time in my life, I saw a sign, you know, coming in as a volunteer that says, do not drink the water. And this is something I never heard of, even during my incarceration on Rikers Island. And you basically are forced to drink the water. There's no warning about it, you know, whatsoever. So, you know, as we move forward, you know, a lot of people always have a lot of questions about, you know, what's going to happen to Rikers Island, you know, afterwards it's shut down. And there's a campaign called Renewable Rikers, which is a campaign with criminal legal justice advocates and environmental justice advocates in order to repair the harms of Rikers Island for people who've been, you know, suffered from it. We believe that in a renewable Rikers, where, you know, communities across the city have these things called peaker plants, and these peaker plants operate like batteries. So when a city is utilizing a certain a high level of energy and power, these peaker plants kick in so the city won't black out. And it's mostly like utilized during the summertime. And then, but the problem is that these peaker plants are toxic. It exudes toxicities into the atmosphere, and they're mostly in predominantly black and brown communities of color and working class, low income communities. So a renewable Rikers would, you know, with, you know, clean energy, sustainable green energy, will help remove these peaker plants, you know, all across from our city. And we could have green, sustainable energy to power the city instead of these peaker plants. And that's the vision for renewable Rikers.
That's amazing. You know, this plan and so much of what you're doing at Freedom Agenda is sort of in, you know, honoring and transforming the pain and trauma that have been caused by Rikers. You know, what are the successes or, you know, hope that you see that this transformation is possible, that we can make this happen?
Yeah, so, you know, successes, like I might have mentioned, in 2019, you know, advocates and, you know, survivors of Rikers and our allies, you know, pushed the city to adopt a plan to close Rikers Island and address conditions of confinement, and we're shrinking our carceral footprint. And in 2021, the Renewable Rikers Coalition got the Renewable Rikers Act passed, which consists of three pieces of legislation. The last piece of legislation is, you know, the city by law has to every 6 months make a determination of what land or facilities are not being utilized by the Department of Corrections. And if that determination is made, that land or facility is transferred to the Department of Citywide Administrative Services. And since that legislation has been passed, we had over 40 acres of land and two facilities for the first time in the Rikers history be transferred from the Department of Corrections to the Department of Citywide Administrative Services. So what gives me hope is those family members, you know, those survivors of Rikers who are in this fight, you know, advocating, organizing for not just for themselves, but for the next generation, that they won't have to experience Rikers Island ever again.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the most powerful things about doing this work is, you know, meeting the people who have experienced Rikers firsthand and their families. And, you know, they're not fighting just for themselves. You know, it's a real testament to solidarity and community that one of the first things anybody says is that I want to make sure that no one else experiences what I experienced. I think we need more of that. We can learn a lot from that sort of very unselfish, community-focused approach to taking care of ourselves, of our city, and of the people who live in it.
Absolutely.
Lorey, you've told us so much about your son and what he's experiencing, and some of the circumstances that have led to him being in Rikers. But I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about who he is as a person, you know, and what you hope for him.
Sure. Well, my son is a young man that grew up without a father figure in his life. He was 4 months old when his father had got murdered. And then his grandfather was a father figure until he got sick and then he passed away. And he grew up angry because he didn't have a father figure in his life. So he went to different behaviors. He had an IEP. He been just trying to find his way. And all I can do is just sit there and try to be a support. Me and his aunt is his most strongest support that's there for him because he really don't have a male figure in his life. So I'm hoping in the future that he will get another chance to try to be the man that he should have been a long time ago. And because he's also a good person, you know, he have a good heart. It's just that he's just been hurt through the way he was raised without a father figure.
Is there anything that gives you hope that this will change for your son and for others?
My hope is I keep praying. I'm just keep praying and hoping that God will place not just my son, but a lot of people, families that's in there for the right services that they need. Because everybody don't need to be behind bars. People is going through trauma stuff that was never addressed. And everybody is like walking over it like it's a doormat.
Yeah. Lorey, is there anything that you wanted to talk about or wanted to say that we didn't get a chance to touch on?
Well, my biggest thing is that service the people where they need to be serviced at, even if it's a mental health hospitalization or a rehabilitation. You know, not everybody, you know, they have to talk to the person that's in there and talk to their families. Get a history of what's, you know, a history of why the people are doing what they're doing. You know, try to help them. And the sad part about it is this budget cuts to where the things that we need, we having a hard time getting.
Yeah. Yeah. Darren, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't touch on?
One thing I'll say is that any family member, any survivor of Rikers who hears this podcast, any, you know, concerned New Yorker that hear this podcast and, you know, they believe in human rights and justice and basic minimum standards for people who are detained in our system, you know, join Freedom Agenda. You know, you could go to, you know, our website to learn more about, you know, our work at fa.urbanjustice.org. or you could go to the campaign to close rackets.org and join this coalition that's doing this Herculean task, I guess the word is, to move this finish line to close this last penal colony in the United States.
Yeah. And Darren, you probably don't remember this, but I first met you at a Close Rikers event at the New York Historical Society many, 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 many years ago. And I remember you saying, you know, like, there's a lot of focus on Close Rikers, but everyone forgets about the build communities part. And it's been really powerful to have this conversation today and to have build communities and invest in communities and invest in the resources that keep people really safe, you know, getting as much billing as the fact that we also need to close these jails. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a testament to you know, the amount of work that you and others have put into this. So thank you very much for joining us today and having this conversation. And, you know, I really challenge anyone who listens to this episode not to get involved. I don't know how they could after hearing what you both have shared with us today. So I really want to thank you for bringing your expertise and your experience to us on Dismantling Injustice.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for joining us. Dismantling Injustice is brought to you by Envision Freedom Fund, an organization that works to transform the immigration and criminal legal systems while meeting the critical needs of individuals impacted by these systems daily. To learn more about our work and donate, visit us at envisionfreedom.org. That's envisionfreedom.org. Dismantling Injustice was created by Sally Israel. Our executive producer is Abigail Wolf and hosted by Carl Hammett Lipscomb. That's me. Special thanks to the team at Envision Freedom for being amazing. Until we're all free, peace out.